Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Elizabeth is the CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, a leading multimedia provider of lifestyle content. The Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. It's where you'll find inspirational and encouraging stories, advice, and information with our radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Real people, real advice, real places, real products and businesses, real life stories, and more, including real celebrity life. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You. Now, here's your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a beautiful, beautiful fall day here in Maine. Hopefully, it's nice where you are. And we're going to get right to it because we've got an hour, and we have the president and CEO of Creative Energy Options with us. Her name is Sylvia LaFaire. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am great, and I am in absolutely beautiful Albuquerque where the Balloon Festival is going to happen.
Oh, how nice. I love it there. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Wonderful, wonderful. We just got in last night, and we're on our way to Santa Fe, but there are going to be lots of gorgeous hot air balloons floating all around the sky for the next few days.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Yeah, I used to live in the Tahoe area, and they have the Reno Balloon Festival. And we put all four of our kids in the back of the van. At, you know, and it must have been 4 in the morning even, and drive from Truckee, which is where I'm from. I live in Maine now, but in Truckee, and we put them in the car real early in the morning and watch all the balloons go up. It's just gorgeous, isn't it?
Oh, great, yes. And Maine is wonderful, too.
Oh, yeah, we love Maine. We're here. We've been here for a long time. But boy, I'm so honored to have you on the line with us, and I've got so many questions for you. You know, let's go through your bio just a little bit so people who know who you are that are listening on the call. You have a global consulting company that's focused on basically making the best out of workplace relationships, and you're also the award-winning author of a lot of books here, Don't Bring It to Work, The Pattern Aware Success Guide, and Gutsy, How Women Leaders Make Change. So you kind of are a master of conflict, of handling conflict, aren't you? Pretty neat.
Well, it's interesting, Elizabeth, when I do programs and I ask the audience, who here likes conflict? Usually you'll see maybe one hand go up,
yeah.
Maybe two, but never more than that out of 50 or 100 or, you know, 500 people. Somewhere along the way, I learned that conflict is really one of the greatest creative assets that we have if we learn how to handle it. So I love it. When I hear conflict, it's terrible. I start to salivate and my eyes light up.
Like your ears perk up, huh? That's funny. Yeah, no, I hate conflict. I mean, I really do. Like even just, you know, I've been married forever and ever. Just like, you know, if you ever have a fight with my husband, it's like, oh, God, just I give up. I surrender. I don't want to fight, you know, kind of thing. So why do you think people don't like conflict? Why do you think you like it and other people are like, oh, ugh?
Well, it's interesting, and I've done a lot of study. My background, interestingly, began as a family therapist. So I was always working with some form of conflict, either husbands and wives who were annoyed with each other or bringing kids in who were driving them absolutely up the wall. So the nature of what I did was around conflict. And as I kept studying and began to make this bridge into the workplace, what I realized is what we learn about conflict, we learned in our original organization, which is the family. Hmm. And I was fortunate coming from a family. I have an older brother, and yes, of course, we used to fight, and occasionally I see my parents get annoyed with each other. But my mother she had a natural tendency to say, sit down, we're going to work this through. Hmm. And, I mean, occasionally as a kid, you know, I got sent to my room, you know, and I would make all these comments in my mind about the unfairness of it. But for the most part, we were able to sit, especially when my brother and I were kind of going at it. Mm-hmm. And first she would say, why don't you solve it yourselves? And when he was older, bigger, when it came to he just wanted to kind of push me and get me out of the room or something. She'd say, no, no, there's more here. And she didn't have the schooling or background to understand this, but I learned that it's resolvable and better things come when you work it through.
Boy, do we have different backgrounds. I'm in the middle of 11 kids.
Oh, my.
Whoa. I don't even know how I resolve conflict, probably by hiding. It's funny. I eat really fast and no one bugs me. It's funny. Oh,
wow.
Boy.
11 kids. That's a breeding ground for really researching conflict. But we all,
yeah.
See, here's what happens is that, and I probably would have gone to high too, you know, just one older brother, but still, you know, these patterns run very deeply in us. And what we learn there is what we take with us. We did it to survive. You ran and hid to survive. I mean, we're organisms meant to survive, so we did whatever we could to be safe and survive. And once we start to look at that differently as we get a little bit older, we can find other ways to resolve conflict. So who knows, next time you and your husband have an argument, maybe you'll kind of look him in the eye and say, sit down, we're going to resolve this.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do anyway. I'm just kind of teasing, but yeah, we've been married for a long time. So we're actually really quite handy at handling any kind of conflict. We pretty much, you know, if we disagree, we do. We sit down and we go, okay, what do you think? What do you think? Okay, what's the solution? And yeah, we don't fight. I think we went through a period of time where we duked it out. But we learned, you know, kind of thing. But
curious.
Yeah.
How many kids do you have?
We have four. Yeah,
okay.
I was just wondering
if you were repeating the pattern of 11.
No. We stopped at four. We have four boys. They're 10, 12, 14, and 16. And
oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah, it's very funny. But so let's talk a little bit about how this applies to work. Is conflict in the house the same as conflict at work? Do the same principles apply?
The same principles apply. Yes, they do. The difference is we cannot have ex-families. We can't have an ex-mother or an ex-father or an ex-sister or an ex-brother. We can have mothers who annoy us and we don't see it all, or brothers or sisters who we call on the holidays, but we can ex them out. We can have ex-bosses and ex-colleagues. So there's just a slight safety factor at work in saying if it's really that bad, you can go elsewhere. But let me tell you what the essence of both family and work are. If the pattern keeps repeating itself and you do leave work and go to another workplace, sooner or later, like Groundhog Day, that pattern's going to show up again. So my theory is resolve it where you are as best you can before you move on.
Now, so I'm not as well versed as you are on conflict, and I'm definitely not a therapist. So if I ask something that's silly, just, you know, nudge it in the right direction. Are people's personalities or nature predisposed to being, you know, like angry or causing conflict or something like that? Or, you know, are some people just more antagonizing than others?
Well, absolutely. And this is, you know, I think this is information that we all need. I cut my teeth on this, if you will, in the realm of therapy, but I really work in the organizational field now. In workplaces, I think we move more quickly and can get more done. What happens, though, is the understanding that we learned it. We found a way in our childhood, again, I'll say it, to survive and be safe. So in a family, you know, if it was a family that covered everything up and just behaved politely, we kept a lot of it in. A lot of families were families that duked it out and the anger would come out. Some families would be passive-aggressive and they would, you know, play another book I'm writing now. It's called The Gotcha Game Unplugged. They play the gotcha game. Mm-hmm. So we learn these tendencies to behave in certain ways as kids. And you can see it in school. You can see it on the playground. You can see it at home. You know, some children have taken the safety route of being passive. Others have taken the route of being really loud and noisy and making waves. How we pick these up, that still isn't totally understood. It's almost like there's a deck of cards handed to us, and we pick a card, and it says, okay, anger, oh, all right, that's my role, I'll do that, or okay, quiet and passive, or okay, pleaser. We're never sure how those get handed, but they do, and that's what we take to work. So, yeah, some people are more annoying than others, absolutely.
Now, if you have that whole mishmash of people at work, and you've got the annoying person, the passive-aggressive person, the positive person, the people-pleaser person, the really angry guy, the really angry girl, how does all that work at work? How does that all play together, and how do all those personalities get along without conflict?
Well, they don't.
And, you know, we're trying to do that in school. You know, everybody behave. You know, like, for example, in my son's fourth grade class, you know, you get a, and I don't love this, but it is what it is. You get a, you know, the teacher, her, I won't say her last name on air, but it's her last name and a dollar. And so you get $5 if you turn in your homework right. You get $10 if you talk really loud, or $10 lost if you talk really loud. Things like that, behavior. But there's so many different behaviors at play in just a classroom. Is that the same at work?
It's the same. You know, it starts early and it keeps moving up through school. We get it reinforced in a school setting. And we'll talk another time about what I really understood about school and what's needed. But that's for a different conversation. We'll stay with work right now.
Okay.
And in the workplace, what I've seen is that once we in the technique in Don't Bring It to Work is called the OUT technique, to kind of log it in people's minds. And OUT stands for observe, understand, and transform. Were it as easy as what I just said, it would be great, but it's doable. So the first thing as adults we have to do is begin to observe the behavior pattern, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Once we see what role we're playing, where we fit into this complexity of the workplace, and you see it a lot in meetings, then it becomes even more obvious. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about that in a minute. The next is to understand where it came from. Now, there is this new work that we're doing about saying, all right, if you look back in your family history, it will be easier to understand why you are behaving, you know, as a pleaser at work or as a super achiever, or we'll talk about the patterns in a minute. Then you make the choice. Is it working for me? Is it forwarding my career? Is it making me more successful? Am I being heard? Am I getting things done? And if the answer is no, then it's time to do the heavy lifting and transform the patterns. And we have techniques and some tools and things you can do. The first, Elizabeth, let me put this in here, is on my Sylvia LaFaire website. It's S-Y-L-V-I-A and L-A-F-A-I-R. On that website, there is a pattern quiz that people can take to get another view of what the patterns are that you're working with. So you can say, oh, yeah, I know that, and or, wow, I never thought of that before. But it gives another marker for you to begin to work with this. We need to change them. So let me just add this because it's important. The behavior patterns we developed in childhood, and it's in the family because that's our original organization, they get reinforced in school. We bring them to work. Now, we can behave in a very pleasant, mature, adult way much of the time. Here's when it really kicks in. It's when stress hits the hot button. When we get overly stressed, the report's due and it's not finished, you know, the finances are bad and the sales are down and it's my job to bring the sales up, whatever it is, when the stress is really high, these old patterns kick in. So if your boss is behaving like a baby, he or she is, and if you're like a thumb-sucking toddler, well, look in the mirror. So that's what we have to get, that we do need to understand these patterns so we can transform them. Does that help?
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And how do you go about understanding yourself, or when you're saying understand a pattern, is that your pattern, or are you trying to deeply understand somebody that you're working with, like you are observing their patterns? Is it yours or theirs? I wasn't sure on that. Or both.
Here's the interesting thing. When we do these half-a-day programs or two-hour programs in organizations, you know, we'll work with the patterns, and I want to go through, not, it's 13 is a big list, but I'll go through as many as it makes sense to do. We go through these patterns just objectively looking at, observing. At the break, people walk away and I hear them saying, oh, that's just like my boss, or oh, that's just like Cindy who sits across from me, or oh, that's just like my mother-in-law. And it's really kind of interesting because it's always about somebody out there. When they come back from break, I will say, how many saw patterns? And everybody raises their hand. Then I see how many saw it on you personally. And I'd say about 25% of the people raise their hands. And it's sort of, interestingly, there's a lot of laughter that goes on then because I say, now we're going to look at your patterns.
Yeah.
So we it's easier to see on others, you know, John is always the procrastinator and his work is always late, or she will never say what she really thinks, she's just such a pleaser, or, you know, he's really a bully and a persecutor. We all have the tendencies in ourselves. So once we become self-aware, and it's what your program is about, how to live your life to the fullest, you know, how to be your best and keep it real.
Yeah,
and so I'm so appreciative of having this time to talk with you and your listeners, because the way to be the best is to really begin to become as self-aware and then pattern-aware as we can possibly be to make positive changes.
Well, I want to hold that thought for 1 second. So self-aware and pattern-aware. Real fast, one of the things I forgot to do at the top of the show was to mention your websites, and you mentioned one of them, which is sylvialafair.com, and that's spelled SylviaLafair.com. And then the other one is Creative Energy Options, which you can find at CEOPTIONS.com, because a lot of people go to the websites while they're listening to us online. And then also, our chat room is open. If you would like to, ask a question or anything like that, just, you know, feel free to type it in there. Sometimes during the day, most of the listens come when people are done working and they download the show at night and things like that. So, but if you, you know, if you're able to sneak on your computer and type us out a message, we'd love to hear from you. But most people are listening on the phone, on their cell phones. Funny, but
right.
Okay, so on creative energy options, you were talking about living your best life and being self-aware and pattern-aware. When you say pattern-aware, I kind of understand, self-aware, you know, very well, but what do you mean by pattern-aware? Just one more time so people understand those two things, pattern-aware.
Well, it's they're cousins, or maybe siblings. Self-aware and pattern-aware. The first thing in self-aware, it's a lot of looking at emotional intelligence,
mm-hmm.
and you begin to look at how you emotionally react. In being pattern-aware, you're looking at the fact that it may not matter that the situation changes. The constant there is you, and I'll give you an example of pattern aware. We actually had somebody who worked for us years ago and really started us down this road of really observing these patterns. And she said to me, she reported directly to me, and I liked her. She was a good person. She said to me, you know, Sylvia, I never can get along with a male boss. Every male boss I have is a persecutor. And when they start to talk to me, I just shut down and become a pleaser. I will not respond to them. I just say yes to everything they say while inside I'm thinking, quote, you jerk. Okay? So
Good flag.
Yeah, right. But it didn't, it was interesting. It was long enough ago that I hadn't put all this together. This has really been research over the last 25 plus years that I've been looking at this. Anyway, we had a reorg at our company, and surprise, surprise, she reported to a male boss. And the male boss she reported to was a very gentle soul, is a very gentle soul, who very kind, and, you know, you would not ever think of him as a bully or a persecutor. Anyway, she would come and complain to me all the time, and I couldn't get it. Well, eventually it made sense for her. She wasn't going to report back to me, and she was going to report to him. So she decided to leave the company, which was good, because we would have probably asked her to leave. We would have, quote, unhired her, a kind way of saying it. Anyway, she left, but we stayed, you know, we stayed friendly. It was very interesting. And so over the next 3 years, I tracked. She went to another company, had a male boss. She thought it was going to be great. You know, she had a great job, called me, started complaining about him. I heard the same thing she was saying about the man she worked for with us. She finally left there, went to another job, had a female she reported to. Things went well till, again, they had a reorg. And for 4 years, I tracked her. And every time she had to be with a male boss, he was the persecutor. So it didn't matter if he was tall, short, thin, fat, old, young. It didn't matter. That's when you get common, to see.
That's a common. Let's learn from this, though, for a minute here, because that is a huge comment. I mean, in my working career, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, I can't work for a woman or I can't work for a guy. And I'm sitting there going, oh, why not? You know, they're. What's the difference? In my head, I'm like, well, okay, I guess, you know. But I've heard it so many times, and I've kind of always wondered, well, I don't really know what that means exactly. I guess you just don't like guys, or I guess you think women are snotty, or there's all sorts of these reasons that come up. You know, like, I could never work for a woman. They're too PMS-y and gripey, groany, you know, snotty, and I could never work for a guy. They always hit on me or whatever. You know, you always hear stuff like that. Is it? So you're saying that it's not really them, it's you.
Well,
you've got that pattern going on.
But then you have to start tracking back. What is this pattern? Why is it? And you see it with so many things. You have to. That's the observe part. Oh, it may be something with me, and when I'm with a male. Who's in charge, you know, who's in authority, or even a male I work with, it doesn't have to even be your boss. This is what happens to me. You really have to track back to what went on in your family.
So it could be something...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so it could be something like, I feel this way because, you know, in my family life, I had a really mean dad or something, so I think, therefore, every time I get around a male boss, that he's going to yell at me or scream at me, or whether the guy is or isn't, that's what you're going to think. Is that kind of what you're saying?
It's very much that. With this gal, years later, she interestingly joined our Total Leadership Connections program that we had started. She did not realize she was one of the reasons we started the program as I began to see this.
But she
joined it from, you know, because she was really shooting herself in the foot professionally. She's a very bright woman. And she began to look at the fact that she grew up in a family with a father who preferred the sons in the family, felt, you know, that the female should not even go to college. It was one of those generational things. And that no matter what she did or how she did it, she could never, in her mind, make him happy or prove to him how good she was. So she took that with her. Now what happens, and I don't want to go into a lot of neuropsychology right now, but the new neuropsychology is giving us answers to things that I intuitively knew, but now we're seeing it in the brain. We're seeing it in brain scans. We're seeing it in where things light up in the brain. And the older parts of the brain, the lower parts of the brain, amygdala and the hippocampus, all those parts of the brain that developed early where we hold fight, flight, freeze, where all our automatic responses come from, where the emotions get flooded, develop in childhood. And so if we can go back and connect the dots, we can begin to say, and it's all changeable. That's what I want you to know. It's back to what you're teaching, you know, how to live your best life, you know, how to be the best you can be. If I didn't think this was changeable, I would be doing something else. It would be too frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
But I know the changes can occur once we observe, but most people will not make that link between family and work. And if they do, I promise it's better.
Yeah, it's hard to, let's go back there to the, how do you recommend people become a little self-aware? By me, you know, it's interesting. I tend to, tell me, correct me here and teach me something. It seems to me like 40 hits and it's like, I get myself finally. Kind of, I don't know. Some people it might be a little earlier and some people it might be later. But I know I got to be around 38 to, I'm 42 now. I felt smarter suddenly, like, oh, I get it. Do you have to have a little maturity under your belt, or do you have to live a perfect childhood to be self-aware, or some people just, you know, self-help gurus, no matter what? The process of becoming a little bit more aware of yourself seems to take some time.
Well, things are changing. It's such a rapid pace right now that I'm finding even the younger generations, the 20-somethings who, mm-hmm. you know, the millennials who want to be promoted after they've been somewhere for 2 weeks, and, you know, being a little over the top with this, but that's what I've been hearing. Once they begin to see the same thing repeating over and over early, by 30, they're saying, I want to do something about this. And there's so much more available. Now,
yes.
Becoming self-aware and doing, you know, a personal development is one of the big steps. And Daniel Goleman, who has done all that fabulous work on emotional intelligence, is absolutely an important marker. Those things are really important. And I say go learn about yourself. Now, the next step is to really begin to connect these dots between work and home. And there is the separation we have created is an illusion, and it's an unhealthy illusion that we're supposed to behave differently at work than we do at home. We're not. To be authentic, you know, I love the way you say it, keep it real. Being authentic means who you are is who you are wherever you are, you know, and go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's no way to hide. I always say this. I don't know. You know, I've worked with so many people over my course of my lifetime at this point, you know, enough. And you could, I'm focusing in, when I think of conflict, I think of an angry person creating, you know, chaos in the workplace. And you can spot them. You know, they're angry at work and they're angry at home. They try not to be angry at work, but angry is angry, and it's easy to see. And do you know what I mean when I say that? You can. It's hard to hide who you are in one place and not the other.
Well, we attempt to, though. We really, and we have created the term politically correct. We're supposed to behave a certain way at work, and then out of work we can kind of let our hair down and be more real, or we think we can be. But it's causing a lot of the excessive illness, the stress-related illnesses that happen at work. I mean, I am convinced that once this connection is made, people, you don't need years and years and years of therapy. Now, this is speaking as someone who was a therapist. And, you know, I must say I was pretty good at what I did, but I couldn't go back and do it now because, you know, I find that once people make this connection and they know that their career, their promotions, their bonuses, you know, everything that they do at work is based on doing a great job, they're really willing to look more quickly, which I find very exciting. But let me just put this in because this is really an important visual. We have created work to be very much like our family. We have bosses, i.e. parents. We have coworkers, i.e. siblings. We get salaries, i.e. allowances. Mm-hmm. You know, we get put on performance improvement plans, i.e. sent to your room. So it's the essence, the subtle essence is very similar.
See why I work from home, I'm not sure.
Well, there you go.
Hmm.
After being one of 11 kids, you need your own free space.
Funny. Okay, so that's one book that, you know, we kind of talked a little, we've talked about Don't Bring It to Work, but I was wondering, do you want to go through the 13 most common patterns, or should we leave that for people to read? You tell me what you want to talk about on the call.
Well, let me do a couple of them. You
okay.
know, and the reason I came up with 13, there are more, but, you know, there's a limit to, you know, the book would have been 500
yeah.
pages. And I couldn't get it to less. It would be great if I could say there are four major patterns and that's it, but it's not the truth. So we're much more complex, subtle creatures than, you know, just one or two things. Here's the essence. There are, out of the 13 patterns, we have a propensity for two or three that are us. You can make a case for all of them, but basically there are two or three. So I'm going to go through just a few of the real, real major ones you see in almost every single workplace that come to the top. One would be the super achiever. Now, I am not talking about someone who's striving for excellence. That's what we all should be doing. The best we can do, and loving the fact that we're creating and making things more wonderful and, you know, solving problems at work, et cetera, et cetera. I'm talking about super achievers, the ones who will step on or over anybody to be first, the me guy or gal.
Yep.
And in a lot of organizations, you will, corporations, you know, larger businesses, you will see this. And what happens is, this is somebody who you could meet in the hallway and you have an idea and the two of you are talking. And 3 days later, there's a meeting and you're sitting there and this guy or gal says, I have a really
great idea.
Yeah. And you're thinking, wait a minute. And there's no credit given, right? No credit. You know, Susie and I were talking and here's an idea, here's a thought I want to throw out. And thanks, Susie, for that. Or, Susie, you told me an idea. Do you want to share it? No.
No.
They
no.
have to be front and
They've
center.
Got it.
Okay?
I've worked with some of those before. They will do anything to become the, you know, vice president of whatever division it is or what. It's absolutely wild and freaky, isn't it? How do you stop that person?
Let me tell you the good news. The good news is all of the 13 patterns that I've described can be transformed to what I call their positive or healthy opposite. Because if you have the energy having to be me, you can take that same powerful energy and change it with a little bit of insight. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So the super achiever, if they begin to see that nobody wants to talk to them because you're not going to give them your ideas to them all the time, and you sit in meetings and everybody's rolling their eyes going, oh, there he or she goes again, sooner or later, if you pay attention, you'll get it, can be transformed to become a creative collaborator. A creative collaborator. And that means to really understand that more positives and more joy out of life comes from sharing and working together. But they have to begin to see, why did this pattern develop in the first place? And I'm going to give you a few clues. Often, these are people who, as children, grew up in a family where there was some kind of shame or sadness. Now, this is not, you don't necessarily have to talk about it at work. This isn't, hello, my name is, and I'm a super achiever, and I came from a family where, you know, my father went bankrupt or he's in prison. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about.
It's not funny, but the way you're saying it's funny. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, that's what I need to teach about being careful with these patterns, you don't wear them on your forehead or you don't plaster them on somebody else's body to say, you are A. You know, this is not that. This is to say these are the tendencies that get in the way of optimum working together.
Right.
And that's what my life is about. Our tagline that we used and put away and we're coming back to is results through relationships.
Ooh,
once
that.
You really understand this. So if you are a super achiever and you're listening to this and you're going, oh, my God, that it really is me, you need to start tracking back to see what is it in your family that you were wanting to prove to the world how great you are, or how great you are because of you came from them, or how great you are to make up for the shame that was there or the sadness that was there.
Yeah.
As I've done this in my executive coaching sessions, what I have found, and we have a lot of really good coaches who have been trained in this model, who are available to help people one-on-one look at what is it that made me have to become the way I am. We just finished a program. There was a man in there, and he's really stressed to the max, being the first best in his company. And he came into the program because his boss had been through the program and thought this would be an ideal place. And he was talking about as a child, his mother would plaster his room with posters of successful people saying, pick the one you want to be because you're going to be have a poster like this about you. Talk about pressure.
Yeah.
You know, so was he going to become the president or was he going to become, you know, the greatest scientist to, you know, cure cancer? And the stress that he feels because he hasn't yet won the Nobel Prize is very sad.
Yeah. That's a lot.
So that's the super achiever. Let me talk about a couple of others. Another one in our culture that is really, it's sort of coming up more and more, and it's an interesting one, is the rebel. And they usually are HR nightmares because they're the ones who are saying things in this organization are unfair, and I know a lawyer is usually the second sentence out of their mouth.
Very.
And there are things that have to be changed and righted. And, you know, I'm watching the stuff about Wall Street and how it's growing in popularity. I'm fascinated by it to see where it is headed. But the point is, yes, there are things that need adjustment. One way is to polarize and get a small group and say we're going to get them, the bad guys. And that causes a lot of dissension in work. The other is the rebel becomes a community builder and will speak up in the organization and say there's some things that need real attention. And when I have the people say, but they won't listen, I say, you know, you're staying in your rebel place. You're not coming into the power as a community builder. There are ways to be listened to. And often rebels came from families where there was disenfranchisement in past generations of people who were, you know, either ethnically or racially or, you know, gender-wise looked over, and this is somebody who's going to right the wrong. There are ways to do it that make a difference. So I've seen people who go from company to company, and they always leave because, you know, they have to have a class action suit or they have to this or they have to. And sooner or later, these people are known as rabble rousers, but that's not making change happen.
Right.
So one more I'll tell you about because it's me and you'll get a kick out of this. And this is really where some of this learning came. I'm a recovering, if you will, drama queen. And the day
I don't know that person at all.
Say that again.
I said I do not know any drama queens at all.
No, I'm sure. Well,
no.
Or kings. There are plenty of drama kings. But here's what happened. Yeah, you know, I'm the younger of two kids, and my older brother sort of, you know, was the lord of the world as I looked up to him. He was 5 years older than I was. And if I wanted attention, I learned very early to have a hissy fit. And lights, camera, action, and there she goes. Okay? So I got attention. I knew how to get attention that way. I also knew if there was stress in the family and I had a hissy fit, they would focus on me and forget about what was really going on. So if my parents were having some tensions that as a kid I didn't know about, I would pick up the energy, because kids do, you know that. And I would just do my number. All right, but so here I am, a grown-up, professional, I'm working. I'm in a meeting. I'm doing some things with many companies. I'm in a meeting, and something happened. It was very upsetting, and I did my, I don't believe that. And somebody said, oh, that's so dramatic. This is years ago, okay, before we named the patterns. So my first thought was, oh, what does he know? I left the meeting, and I thought I was right, and he was just, you know, making a comment that was unnecessary. And off I trot to a meeting in the afternoon, and totally different group of people, same Sylvia, but totally different group, totally different circumstances, but an upset happened. And yeah. I, you know, did my award-winning, I can't believe this. And somebody said, oh, can we do this without all that drama? Well, that's twice in one day, right?
Yeah.
The kicker was that evening, I have two daughters, and my younger daughter called from college, and she was telling me something that happened, and I said, Julie, that is just terrible. She said, Mom, when you start getting that dramatic, it gets exhausting to talk with you, so how about if we talk another day? And she hung up, and I just sat there looking at the telephone. And my initial reaction was to do another, what does she know? But I thought three times in one day, you know, that was a bingo. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, wow, this is different. I know my emotional intelligence and when things go up and things go down and, you know, I could handle and stuff some stuff in some meetings. But this was a pattern. And when I started tracking it back, to what went on in the family, because it's a paradox. I was often, as a kid, doing this to diminish the stress in the family, but, I was a kid, and it wasn't the best way. The other pattern that's very similar to this is the clown, who in a meeting will make bad jokes and diminish the tension, but it also takes the focus off of what we're doing. And they learn to become humorous, which is, it's all in the timing. And as a drama queen or drama kings out there, we can learn to be good storytellers. So that's how I transformed the energy of having to do my Academy Award, this is terrible and how dare anybody and how awful this is, into being able to find stories that are good ways to be teaching tools.
And do you do community theater? Do you get the drama out in theater? I said, do you get the drama out of you in some type of community theater, or maybe that's how you conduct seminars?
It's how I conduct seminars. Yes, it's I didn't like to speak in front of groups, but once I was able to really understand the power of storytelling and how it was in me taking this need for, you know, expressing where things were dissatisfying. I love to speak now, and I speak a lot, you know, at different meetings, and bring people in to begin engaging them to understand this also.
Well, you know what I'm loving about this, and I'm hearing that we're not perfect people. None of us are. And if you think you're perfect, give me a call, because I really want to interview you. If you think you're so great,
and I want to listen in,
give me a call. Yeah, and you want to listen in. But what I love about this is, and I love this about life, is taking what it could be perceived as a pretty negative quality, and flipping it around to channel the energy of it to a positive way. Like you're saying, okay, well, I was a drama queen, but I'm a great storyteller. Okay, yes, I'm a super high achiever, but I didn't know what you turned the super high achiever into.
Into a creative collaborator.
into a creative collaborator, yes, that's right. And the rebel got turned into a
community builder.
Community builder, see?
Or taking what's not working and making, you know, it's like I'm watching this Occupy Wall Street. When we get back east, my intention is to go to New York if it's still going on and do some interviews. I want to see if a lot of these people were from families where they felt disenfranchised, because a lot of them seem to be college people who are out of college saying, we can't find work, it's not fair. Mm-hmm. But I want to go see if I can track back to some of the subtleties in this. I'll let you know.
Yeah, no, please do. I hope you come on again because it's fascinating. But, there's something to really be learned here. I don't know if it's, you know, if you're sitting there in an office and you're like, oh, yes, Johnny, yeah, I see you over there, and you're thinking in your head you're a total high achiever, you need this. I don't know that it's up to you to necessarily tell Johnny that he's a high achiever and he needs to come to your classes and seminars. But how do you do that? If you're sitting there and you're listening right now and you're like, okay, you're an overachiever, you're a rebel, you're just a jerk, you know what I mean? And you're the one finger-pointing. How do you flip that around? Do you just say, okay, as a group, all of us are going to come to this seminar and we're all going to learn about ourselves?
Well, here, there are many ways. You know, we have people who have started book clubs at work using Don't Bring It to Work to begin to discuss things. And this is not about full self-disclosure in front of everybody. I reality TV, and I've had several reality TV people that I've done some work with. In fact, one of them went through our leadership program to begin to change his life. This thing of showing everything on television, I think, is dangerous and really unhealthy. It's not about full disclosure. It's about acknowledging and owning your own part in things in front of people without having to say a lot. You know, I don't tell people to say, if they're working, those who are using the book as a study tool, to say, oh, I am a. It's, you know, I have a tendency toward, or I've noticed your tendency is to really be a pleaser. And, you know, you say yes a lot. And let me give you an example. And so working with the book as a group is one thing. We go in and do 2-hour presentations, and then people continue on from that to learn. It's not about finger pointing. It's about saying we're all human beings really searching to become the best we are. I do believe that. Sometimes people say, oh, you're a Pollyanna. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. I believe we are programmed for excellence, for creativity, for beauty, and for altruism and caring. Yeah, and that's all in the neocortex. It's in the new part of the brain. We have to get through all the places where we are afraid and have to survive and struggle. That's in the lower parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. So doing this work pushes you up to the newer parts of the brain.
Yeah, definitely. It's neat to be able to do that. One of the ways
is to really become, as what we talked about, self-aware, which says, what part am I playing? The other thing is in relationships, these patterns, they it's like the holes in his head fit the bumps in yours. These patterns play out so that, you know, we have to begin to look at, I'll give you an example. I have a colleague I've worked with and have for years, and we work fabulously well together. We're doing the Gutsy programs together. It's Mary Jane Saris. And she grew up in the South in a very genteel family where especially the females learned to be pleasers. And when we first worked together, and, you know, I saw myself as her colleague, but I was her boss. I would say, would you? And she would always say yes. And, you know, it was easy for me because I thought she was saying yes because she really wanted.
If somebody
and
like that would say that works with me, I said the other day, okay, now here, we're going to practice. Say no to me.
Perfect.
Say no. We're going to learn the power of no.
No is a complete sentence.
Yeah.
You don't have to defend, explain, or justify. But picture this. So we're having a meeting, and something has to get done, and I'm a big picture thinker. I don't like to do a lot of the detail stuff. She's great with it. And I said, would you do blah, blah, blah? And she looked at me and she said, no.
Huh.
I said,
darn,
what,
I taught
you
that
mean,
word.
No. Help me, help me. I don't know what that word means. What do you mean? No? She said, listen, Sylvia, this is, again, years ago because we've learned to work with this. She said, you know, my tendency is to want to be a pleaser with everybody, but especially with you. I like you. I like working with you. She said, but no, I can't put that on my plate. And we have to figure out who else can do it, but I won't. And I looked at her and I said, I am both celebrating what you did and going, what kind of crazy thing did I create here?
Yeah.
And we laughed about it, but, you know, it's so freeing being authentic.
Yeah.
And learning. And the pleaser morphs into the truth teller.
Yeah.
So it's and she's fabulous as a truth teller now. She will not block. That doesn't mean she won't say yes if it's appropriate, but she also will say no when she needs to. And it came from her childhood.
That's so cool. It's the fastest hour I've ever had on this radio show, which is amazing. We have 10 minutes left to talk with you. So that's my cue. We're going to need many more radio shows with you because when we have guests on and it goes this fast, it's our... We love having you back on again. What's gutsy? We want to talk about this with like 8 or 9 minutes left. Yeah, gutsy.
Okay.
How women leaders make change.
Okay, so here's the thing. You know, I have been tracking. I love trends. So I track trends. And one of them is that it is time for women to really stand up even more strongly than ever before and move into the forefront. And so I decided to do some research. Gutsy will be ready in November. It will be an ebook and a paperback book, and mainly we're going to be putting it out as an ebook so people can get it quickly, and it's going to be somewhere between 97 and 110 pages, so it's shorter, okay? Mm-hmm. What I did, I had so much fun writing this, was I tracked back. Rather than looking back at just family history, I was looking back culturally. And I tracked back to see how did we get into the place where we became, so many of us, pleasers and martyrs and put ourselves at the end and didn't speak up and so forth and so on. And so I was just fascinated with a lot of the research that I found. And bringing it into now, including, and you'll crack up from this, I have one little section that's titled, When Barbie Married the Hulk, We All Started Hating Our Bodies. You begin to look at how culture has formed some of it. And I have research in there that they did a study.
I'm laughing all day, sorry.
Isn't that perfect? But they did a study with preteen girls about, you know, the ideal look. The ideal girl was 5'7", long blonde hair, and weighed 97 pounds. So, hello, Barbie.
Hello, yeah.
But then I found, and you have boys. Then I found that the boys are having a lot of body issues around, you know, being big and strong and being bulked up, and thank you, Hulk, not Ken. Ken was sort of in the Ken doll
I'm glad you found. I was worried when I heard Barbie. I'm like, no, please not Ken, because that's not who we're marrying.
No, it was, you know, and Hulk also was the big, strong guy who would, you know, like Superman, who would make everything happen. But the research in this is just phenomenal.
Sure,
and then, so it's in three, so I have it looking from the OWL technique. So the first section is about observe and really begin to look at what are the things, the messages you got and how you see yourself as a woman, as a female working in a place, as a boss, as somebody who wants to lead. The second is understand, and that's really being self-aware. And I have lots of places in there where from birth through adulthood where you can look at how you learn things. The one I loved was where I got to the tweens, where it's too old for toys and too young for boys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what messages culturally we have been given. And the third part is transform. And I do put some challenges in for us to become much more vocal about making changes. You know, there's difference between child care and caring for children. Mm. And we need to really begin a different dialogue around that.
Wow, that sounds like a fascinating book. And just that,
yeah,
and it sounds like a pretty quick read, too. Oh, I'm excited for that one. Hurry up and finish that one already. I want to read it.
Well, you know, I've got the Gotcha Game Unplugged, and then the next one after that, you'll love the title, is Radical Relating, How Men and Women Do It Right.
Oh, funny. Oh, yeah.
So we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, yeah. Now, that's coming out in November, right, Gutsy?
Gutsy will be ready in November, so just go. Mm-hmm. And we're redoing our website, so we'll have these new, fresh, fun websites coming up.
Nice.
Within the next month, too. But Gutsy, you can go online in November and order. And then we're doing the Gutsy Women Weekends, and we're going to start doing them around the country. Right now we're doing them in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and it's a weekend, you know, Friday evening, and it finishes Sunday before lunch. You have brunch that day. And we're going to do one in Orange County in California. And who knows, Elizabeth, maybe we ought to come and do one in Maine with you.
Oh, yeah. We'll have lots to promote on Best Ever You. Maybe some of us could get, you know, maybe Best Ever You readers can, you know, download it a few days early or something like that when the book comes out. And then we'll put all of that information up in our network for the different retreats that you have or the seminars. What, I don't know if you call them seminars or retreats, but that sounds like a lot of fun and lots to learn. We only have 3 minutes left, and what a tremendous resource you are. I'm so glad I found you in the world. How exciting.
Oh,
I hope everybody listening is just like, all right, we found somebody really, really knowledgeable today about you're more than conflict, though. You've got this whole background behind you of therapy, so you're kind of like just wise. I love it. Yeah, I mean, if there's anybody who can look
you.
At a critter and help them be their best, it's you. I love it. I mean, I think you get people. And what I'm loving most about this call is that you're not a people hater, you're a people lover, and you see the best in people all the way around. And if you have negative qualities, you're there to help turn those negative, what you would call maybe negative qualities, and flip them around so they're productive and positive, to channel it so you go forward and don't get stuck. I love it.
Oh, thank
love
you.
It.
And,
love
and
it.
You
love
get it.
It.
That's absolutely the truth.
Well, good. So match made in heaven, and I hope you come on again. But we have 2 minutes left, and we won't start a big new topic. So let's maybe talk about your websites a little bit more and make sure people know where to go and find you. You can listen. You can contact Sylvia LaFaire at sylvialafaire.com, or you can go to her website, her other website, which is CEOPTIONS.com, which is Creative Energy Options. And you are the author of several books, Don't Bring It to Work. And then what are the other ones? I know Gutsy, which is coming out in November.
Right,
there,
and the Pattern Aware Success Guide is a 90-day Yeah, it's something you do for one thing a day for 90 days to really help transform the patterns. So
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of fun, and most of the things in there you can do. It takes 5 minutes, 10 minutes to think about each day.
Yeah, so think about that as you're, you know, a lot of us like to invest in ourselves, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a $5,000 investment, you know, in something. It could be as simple as turning to your websites for some of these books and seminars and things like that to just, you know, make yourself a little bit better. So I just want to thank you for being with us today. And I want to let the listeners know that thank you so much for all your prayers and thoughts regarding my father. My father is having surgery tomorrow to remove the cancerous kidney. And so I am leaving to go back to Minnesota, but in Facebook, Gabe Berman, you're my angel, and thank you so much for all of your thoughts and prayers. There's a whole page dedicated to my dad with all of you guys writing in there. So my dad's at the Mayo Clinic, and he's going in tomorrow for surgery. And so I'm headed to Minnesota next week, and I'll be doing the shows. I don't know. I may have to do them from the Mayo Clinic, but I'll be doing the shows from Minnesota with my parents. And just want to thank you all so much. And Sylvia, thank you. And we will follow up in the Best Ever You Network with Sylvia. We've got a posting and a blog about her, the website to go visit her, and CEOPTIONS.com, and visit us at BestEverYou, BestEverYou.com, and BEYNetwork.com. Thank you so much. And
thank you. And I'm going to add my prayers for your dad also.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we need them. So pray, and keep us in your thoughts, and I appreciate it. And we'll see everybody next Thursday, all right? Sylvia, have a wonderful day, and thank you for being on the show. It's just been an absolute joy to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
All right, take care.
Mm-hmm.